Hello, and welcome to the Pinoy Patriarch Project podcast. I am your host, Michael Pana. I am a husband, father of three boys, and full-time protector who is on the journey of learning what it means to be the leader of my home, my business, and my community. In this podcast, I speak to Filipino and Filipino-American leaders who exhibit strength, honor, and courage, who are leaders in their respective fields. In this episode, we sit down with Leo Manalo, a Tuhon, or master-level instructor in Atienza Cali. He is also a married man with two young daughters. He currently is a full-time martial arts instructor through Atienza Cali and teaches the groups in the New York, New Jersey tri-state area. He recently returned from a successful seminar in Ireland. I've known Tuhon Leo for over two decades, and in this interview, we dig into his childhood as a Filipino immigrant, how his desire to be more masculine and tough brought him to the gang life, and how training in martial arts led him to the Atienza family, ultimately resulting in his departure from the gang life and toward a more positive path. We also discuss topics such as marriage and fatherhood, and how our Atienza training helped us in those areas of our lives. I'm a huge proponent of martial arts training as a means of finding brotherhood in our ever-divided world. This episode truly shows how the martial arts can be a positive avenue for any young Pinoy who is walking down a negative path. We aim to show how Atienza Cali helped Tuhon Leo not only become a better martial artist, but also a better husband, father, son, and friend. We hope you enjoy. I've known you for almost two decades, but I don't know much about your background. So I definitely want to kind of go to the origin story and ask you, you know, where were you born? You know, what was your family life like? Those types of things. So if you just want to go back to the beginning, talk about those things.
Sure. Let's see. I was born in Manila, Philippines. And I immigrated over here with the family around when I was four. And originally we stayed with my aunt's family in Long Island. They're the ones that, I guess, sponsored our family. And then we moved to Manhattan, Upper Manhattan, by the time I was five. So, and then we kind of stayed in Manhattan till I was in my teens. Then my family was able to, you know, the whole like immigrant story, they were able to save up money and we got a house and we moved into a house in Westchester. And then from there, high school is in the Bronx, and then college. I went originally first to Binghamton, and then from Binghamton to City University. And in that transition between Binghamton and City University is where I met up with Tong Carl, right? But before that, I would say that, like, I got into martial arts around college years. So that's really like one of the big things there. In regards to my immigration, like into my history, I would say that it's very common what we went through. I was just re-listening to Tuhon Carl's interview with you, and we had the same kind of upbringing where my parents felt like they shouldn't speak to us in English. I mean, in Tagalog. So we were spoken only in English, and they tried to make us speak in English only. So that part is very common. You know, when we were growing up, when we were in Manhattan, we were in the Upper Manhattan, which wasn't like the best place, but it wasn't like the worst place. It was very in between. We had, it was in Spanish Harlem around that area. I faced a couple of like difficult racist things growing up, bullying, but they're not too bad. I mean, I think that considering I was one of the few Asians, it was not as bad as it could have been. I kind of attribute that to being lucky and meeting the right friends, friends that I've had pretty much since grade school. I still have now. And so those guys, like, they really accepted me as their own. And, you know, maybe a lot of it is also, I was Filipino. So it's not as Asian as my Chinese and Korean counterparts. I do remember them getting a lot of flack when I was growing up, but not not as much as I received, but I did receive like some. And I mean, I remember growing up and, you know, luckily we had a lot of like, I had family here. So even though we had problems, like I could turn to my cousins and technically I was the second oldest. So my oldest cousin, like usually went from my little brothers getting and my little cousins getting into trouble, them calling up to their older cousins, then it all ended up to me. And then if I couldn't solve the problem, then it was my oldest cousin that kind of we all fought together. So that's kind of how we grew up. Let's see. Then, and you know, honestly, my parents really tried to give us the best, you know, the best that they could. And from there, you know, I went to college and, you know, we had a pretty, I didn't really want for anything, you know, like my, if my dad asked, if I asked for anything, my dad would give it to me, you know, that also could be because I was also the oldest son. So, you know, I have that in the Filipino culture of like, the oldest son kind of gets what he wants, right? So like, for instance, if somebody wanted to borrow the car, you know, I asked for it to get the car. And then also, you know, like I would get a car and like, if I wanted to go down to Florida, I could go down to Florida with that car and really no questions asked. So I kind of grew up in that sense of like, of the Filipino culture that way, you know? And then really it was in college where I started to kind of make an adjustment, like where I thought I kind of made a decision that, hey, things should be a little bit tougher. You know, like I met up with various groups, especially in the Chinese community, and they're just like tough guys. Like I met like a lot of Muay Thai, like Thai guys, and they're tough guys. And I was like, oh, that's, I'd like to be part of that tough guy culture, right? So so I kind of did that. And that's when I started getting into martial arts. Like before that, my parents didn't do martial arts. I was more into academics, you know? And then I went into martial arts and luckily I was able to, you know, I did Taekwondo, I did Wing Chun. There's a guy that did Tai Chi there that like was like a combative form of it. And then really where I got more into martial arts was when I met up with this Chinese group, and one of their guys was a kickboxer that went to like Hong Kong to fight. And I was introduced to him and we were able to like spar all the time. So that's really where I kind of like started getting into it. But culturally, even though I knew I was Filipino, I associated myself more with the Chinese, because when we were growing up, there was no one in my peers that was Filipino. They're mostly like I said, if there's an Asian group, it was mostly Chinese or Korean. You know, like that's really where I learned about being Asian, was that like Chinese Asian. So for me, for a very long time, I really thought I was more leaning towards my Chinese side of the Filipino mix, you know, because we do have some Chinese somewhere in like our history, right? And it wasn't until after I got to SUNY Binghamton where I started hanging out interestingly enough, hanging out with a Chinese person that knew the Atienzas, right? And they're the ones that mentioned like, oh, there's these three brothers and they didn't say Filipino martial arts, but they're Filipino and they did martial arts and they're very good at it. And I still didn't connect with them at that time. It was only when I moved back into the city that another Filipino or half Filipino friend of mine mentioned like, hey, you should go meet these brothers.
So going back to when Leo, about that again, thank you for sharing all those things. I wanted to make sure that I came into this interview with kind of a blank slate, and I didn't know that you were actually an immigrant from the Philippines. How old were you when you moved here again?
Four.
That's right. Okay, so 4 years old. Did you spoke some Tagalog when you came in? But you,
yeah, I was like, again, I was as fluent as a 4 year old, and then pretty much like, you know, when I met my cousins in Long Island, I was still fluent, and like we didn't understand each other. It was only when we started going to school when I was five, which is kindergarten, that, you know, my parents were like, no speaking Tagalog, English only. And, you know, and from there, like, I've gotten that same kind of like upbringing where I could understand Tagalog, but I cannot speak Tagalog unless it's like a very basic level, right? So I could speak Tagalog, but it's just very basic. And even now, like, I'm, you know, I'm trying to relearn it, and it's still very basic.
I was really curious about what your childhood was like. Like, you know, what was it like to grow up going from a foreign country like the Philippines, coming here, dealing with some of the racism? But, you know, what was your overall childhood like?
I mean, we were very, you know, I think, again, this is a very Filipino thing, but we were very happy. Like, there's no, like, you know, like, I look at now at other cultures and, like, generally, Filipinos are very thankful for what they have, whether it's very minimal to very wealthy. We're very thankful. You know, when we were growing up in Manhattan, like, we had a one bedroom apartment for five people, right? And so, you know, it was my parents, my siblings, all in one room. Sometimes we'd have visiting relatives that were also like coming over. So they would have the living room, you know, like, and that was very common growing up, like just having a lot of family going in and out, right? And again, my family's focus was more on academics. Like, they're like, hey, study, 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 you know, get that done. There was not a lot of like, you know, I wanted to do martial arts because, again, growing up, Channel 5, 3 p.m., you know, kung fu movies, that's what I grew up with. And that's what I always played around with my friends. And, you know, even like growing up with other people that were racist, there was always that like, oh, does he know karate? Does he know kung fu? And I kind of use that as my advantage for like having to deal with certain things, you know. I remember even back then, like making like paper throwing stars and like selling them, and, you know, the nunchucks. We had the nunchucks, all those things growing up, but no real like. We didn't really have the money to send me to martial arts.
As you got older, when you started going through high school, you know, you're very academic centric. Were you into any sports? Were you anything like that?
Yeah, and then eventually I went into like track and field. So I was very, also one of the things, I was very sickly growing up. I had asthma as a kid. And so I wasn't, you know, very physical until one day, you know, they were doing a phys ed class. And they had to do like all these, like, there's like a president's test, I think, at that time there, the government was running those things. And I scored well enough that the track coach was like, hey, you should do track. And, you know, and actually I attribute running track to fixing my asthma.
Cool.
So no, that's kind of like contraindicate, you know, like there's like, the more I ran, the less I had my asthma. So that kind of like, moved me towards the more, you know, physical centric side.
100%. No, that's really cool. What events did you run in track?
I did mostly sprints. Like, you know, I mean, the most I did was a mile, but I was really like 400s. I did a lot of 4x2s, like fours, 4x4s, 4x2s, or the 40, you know. Also, I was a small frame, so I was like always put in with, like, you know, there's weight classes up to a certain point when you're growing up. And even there, I was like more on the lower side of the weight classes. So generally I was taller than a lot of people that were, I was in that weight class, but I was not as heavy. So that's like So it kind of helped me out in that way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I went to college, I also continued running. But when I got to college, like, running was a lot more, like, it was a lot more difficult, right? So it was now you're a small, like a big fish in a bigger pond, you know? So it was more difficult. And then I also started doing martial arts more in college. So that's why I kind of moved away from continuing on to track.
Awesome. No, thank you for sharing that. That's another thing I didn't know about you. That's really cool. Yeah. I'm really glad I got to ask that. So I want to kind of fast forward a little bit as you spoke about yourself going to high school and college. You started to steer more away from the academics. This has really struck me what you said. You thought things needed to be tougher.
Yeah.
I'm really curious what that means. Like, one, what did you mean by that? And also, you know, what drove you to that?
Well, like I said, I think that I was fairy tale life, but like I got a lot of the things that I wanted. My father just, you know, my parents gave it to me. I didn't really want for anything. You know, it's like we had cars. It's not like, you know, when I look at like other friends, they didn't have vehicles. I had vehicles. I had like, you know, and a lot of that is my parents just not letting me know, like, you know, like, hey, this is reality, like, this is money and this is what you have to do with it. They're just giving me stuff. So, but when I went to college, I really saw that, hey, there's like, you know, your mind now is like really opening up, and now you're not involved with just your family. Now you're like, and so I'm really understanding things. And like, you know, my first sociology class blew my mind. You know, like the way they explain, like, this is like this is like how the world runs. And I was like, that's not how the world, I'm like, nope, this is how the world runs. Even though we blind ourselves somewhat to like how the machine moves, this is like, you know, like, yeah, money, like you are paid for what you're trying to do. Like, you know, like it's not given to you. You have to earn it. Right. Like, and then also, like, we believe that it's meritocracy, but like it's somewhat like that, but it's not really like, yes, it's much as like what you do, but it's also like the circumstances. So a lot of real things were happening, like where I was opening up my eyes, and then I kind of thought about it, like I was not really tough, or I was not around a lot of tough people. But people I did meet, they were tough, and they were like, you know, there were, so for instance, I remember we were out in, so this is still in college in Binghamton. It was a bunch of me and my friends, Chinese friends, and we were in a car getting gas. And I guess somebody drove by, or somebody in another vehicle was there filling up as well. And there was like some racist interaction, and my friends all jumped out of the vehicle. They're all ready, and like I didn't jump out, right? And then afterwards, nothing happened. But then my friends came up to me and said, like, my friend David, you know, came up to me, and I remember him saying, like, he was like, dude, like, if your brothers jump out, you have to jump out. Like, everybody has to come out. Everybody has to fight. And I was like, I didn't even know it was a fight. You know, I was like, I wasn't tracking any of those things. Yeah, like, that's one of the protocols. If guys are out, then you step out too. You don't just sit in the car. You know, that's one of your jobs, right? As a male, right? So that was like first part about it. And I was like, wow, okay. I'm getting that understanding of like being tough and you know, really speaking up for yourself. Like in college, you speak up for yourself, or at least not back then, you're taught now to start speaking up for yourself. Where culturally, you know, you keep your head down, right? You keep your head down and your eyes down, and you just kind of get things done, right? But now, like in college, and the friends I'm meeting are like, hey, like you don't have to like take anything. You know, like, you can be yourself and not be put down.
So you were speaking to one, Leo, regarding your upbringing. And again, I feel this kinship with you in that it reminds me of my childhood. I was a kuya, I was mm-hmm. my family. And I never really, you know, I had everything that I needed. But again, there was this sense of longing for something deep within me that I had to be more aggressive. I needed to be more capable. I needed to be tougher. And so when you hung out with these, you know, I think you said they were these Chinese friends of yours, they kind of exposed mm-hmm. you to this world of martial arts and being a tough guy and all these different things. In that space of time, you know, is it safe to say that there was a part of you that longed for that type of masculine aggression, even when you were a kid? Could you kind of trace it back to then? Was that a feeling you had earlier on, or is that something that was cultivated purely in college?
I think I've always, so when I was growing up, but it more manifested again, I think, while I was in college, but I did have a lot of rage growing up, you know, and again, that could be a lot of different factors, like, you know, being one of the few Asians, and then, you know, going through certain racist like interactions with people, and then now really in college being able to vent it out. But I had a lot of rage, like even for my size, I was like lifting a lot more than I like people thought I should be able to, you know, like people were like accusing me of doing steroids, like all these things. But I was still, I just had like a lot of pent up like aggression, I think. And I never really got to like really release it outside of running. And running is more like, is more of therapeutic, where you're just getting tired, you're just getting exhausted from running, but like nothing really, like for me, like punching anything, you know, like I really think like you should punch stuff, like it helps 100%. You get rid of like some like negative stuff, like, you know, good like bag session always can help a lot. So yeah, I don't know where it came from, but I just found that in college I was able to, you know, really express it more. Right.
And so like around this time, you were mentioning that this is where you're really diving into martial arts, kickboxing, you mentioned Tai Chi, you mentioned a healthy place, as you mentioned, to really cultivate that aggression and that rage. Mm-hmm. When you start, I want to now segue to time when you were starting to meet the Atienzas. And you've already spoken about this on the Firesides a bit, but I would really love to hear it from you in this interview, how you make that connection. And also, as you made that connection, your first session, I know this story, some people might know this story, but your first time meeting Tuan Carl Manong Bush, what that was like, and how that really reframed your mindset, not just in terms of martial arts, but also from what I had to gather, they really took you in eventually as like for the family. Like, how did that basically pull you out of your, you know, your young rage and all those things, and then really cultivate that with this family?
Sure. So again, like, from college, I met a group of Chinese tough guys, and, you know, they were hanging out, like, you know, they were in the gangs. And so I was part of that culture, right? I was part of that culture. So at that time, I'm still not doing Filipino martial arts. What I do know is that I hung out a lot of pool halls, right? And I know, like, pool halls, you could throw balls, and there's sticks there. So I was like, hey, there's like sticks. I should really learn how to use a stick or weapons, right? And then that kind of led me to Filipino martial arts. And I was like, oh, I should learn how to do Filipino martial arts. And at that time, so I went in and I took a Pakiti class, right? I took a Pakiti because that was one of the biggest things in, you know, you look up Filipino martial arts at that time frame, and it was, a lot of it was Pakiti. They're well known and they're easy to find. And the problem, so again, nothing against the system, but like the people I met there, they were pretty much jerks. Like I went in and they're like, oh, like they gave me a hard time, and more about like they weren't friendly. They weren't like welcoming, not like our group, or very, I think like our group is like very welcoming. They had a lot of like, oh, you want to be a badass? And I was like, I guess, you know. And so I took classes with them, and we were doing the drills. And, you know, again, I didn't stay too long because I ended up meeting with the Tianzes, but like, we were doing drills, and I remember doing the drill, and like, it was a basic, like, so they would teach you the hour, they were not even the hourglass, it was the male and female triangle, right? So I was learning that, and I was also learning, I had a wooden knife, and I would do like the thrust pulling out slash. And I remember doing that, and I remember doing that to my, and showing my dad. And my dad was watching me do it, like in the backyard, and he was like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, this is how you fight. And I was like, this is how you fight. And he was like, and I told him I was doing the triangle. And again, I didn't stay long. So I didn't know what, like, you know, this is what they told me, that this is what it was for. This is our footwork. And then my dad was like, why would you do that? Like, you're stuck inside this triangle. And I was like, no, this is what it is. And they're like, he's like, well, why don't I just punch you when you get to the top of the triangle? And I was like, and in my head, I was like, why can't you do that? Like, you know, so I was like, oh, and so I was really kind of getting disillusioned, because like, here we are in class and I'm just learning drills. And the drills, when faced off against somebody that wasn't part of the system, I was having, you know, I was getting a conflict. I was like, oh, this guy could hit me. And like, why aren't you doing what we were supposed to be doing? Right. And at that time, at the same time, I met up with a friend, like my roommate's friend was like, he knew I was doing FMA. And he was like, hey, you should meet up with these guys, which were the Atienzas. And you should really like, they are like, they're the guys. So I was like, sure, why not? You know, I'm not really digging where I was at, you know, and I wasn't really digging where I was at. And then from there, I met with Tuong Carl in 93. I remember it was 93, and we met at the Filipino Independence Day Parade, right? And, you know, we got introduced by my friends, and then and it was very casual. You know, it was very casual. Tuong Carl has a story, of course, like, you know, like he knew something was different because I was wearing a turtleneck at that time, and it was summer. You know, but, you know, I was with the Asian, like I was the palest, like Filipino he's seen at that time. And I met up with them, and then he was like, hey, yeah, we'll meet up a week later or something and just come to my place. Right. And so from there, you know, I made an appointment to meet up with them, and it was in the Union Square area at that apartment. And the first thing, you know, I was like, I kind of met up with his father first. Like his father was the one that answered. And then Tuong Carl came out, and, you know, like, oh, I thought that I might be training with Tito Butch. But then it was like, no, you're going to train with my son. And I was like, which was Carl, of course. And Tuong Carl. And I was like, yeah, that's the guy I met, you know? So yes. But then at the same time, like, I was like, but this is the guy I'm going to train with. And I was like, I don't know, like, is he any good? Like, everybody I met before were much older to train with, you know, and he was my age, or like younger than me, I think, you know, younger than me. And I was like, well, okay, so what are we going to learn? And then like, can you show me something? And I think I said, like, can I show you something? And he was like, yeah, what would you do? What if I did this? And back then I used to carry a little pipe. So I just like pulled out the pipe and just swung at him. And I remember taking like a couple of swings, and then that was it. Like, I remember missing him and then being on the floor. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. I think that's pretty good. I'll keep coming, you know? So that was like really the start of it, where we met up. And during that time frame, like, they kind of put me through a modified like program, which was 3 months to see if, you know, if I would stick around, and if they could influence me, because they knew what, you know, who I used to hang out with. And it was a good time, because like at that time, like, we're doing a lot of training. It was very physical, which I really liked. And then also, like, every time there was a break, Tito Butch was there, and like, he would talk to us about culture. Like, he would show me books. And, you know, like, there's a lot of conflict, because this was not culture that I grew up with. Like, even though it's Filipino, it was not the Filipino like I grew up with, like, which is, you know, Catholic background. Like, this is like why you wear this. So it was this very counter colonialism, you know, like, so like the talk about like why we actually wear, you know, barongs and all that stuff, where I grew up like, oh, barong is a status symbol, when, you know, when it's really like, hey, they made us wear it because they wanted to make sure that we didn't have weapons, you know? So even as I was training with Carl, with Tuan Carl and his father, learning all this stuff, I was also getting a lot of like flack from my parents, from my dad, because of the way I would always just bring that culture back to the house. And he was like, no, that's not what it is. And I'm like, no, it is like that. And like, you know, we're getting into arguments that way. But it was still a good time of always constantly training with the Atiens. And from there, I met his brothers, you know, they would show up every once in a while. And we got to hang out with them. And it was a good time because we're the same age. You know, we, you know, like eventually Tuan Carl and I even went to the same school. You know, we even like stayed at an apartment till we roomed together. You know, and one of the things we had like the same likes, where we rode motorcycles. You know, that was our big thing back then. So not only, so a lot of it was like training, school, and motorcycles. I mean, that was like all of our time. Like, and so for a long time, it was like that. And not, you know, back, and also like, you know, growing up in the city, partying. So it was a good time to really cultivate the martial arts, but build that family and friendship.
That's really cool, because hearing the impact of, you know, the Chinese community, this Chinese group that you were hanging out with, some of which were, you know, tough guys, gang affiliated, you know, all that, you know, and then going to this other world almost, where you're with these Filipinos now, who are revealing this entire new world to you. I was always curious about this, and I hope I can ask this of you, but was there any, there was conflict between, you know, obviously your upbringing with your dad and, you know, what you were bringing back from the Atiens household. Was there any conflict with the guys you were hanging with going and hanging out with the Atienses?
No, they're like, they are built on the fact that they are taking advantage of kids that have need. You know, the first need is like protection, money, you know. And really, when I was hanging out with them, my need was only for like, what I didn't know back then was like for a brotherhood or tribe, like having that group, right? I didn't have that. And that's but I didn't need their money. You know, like they would hand out money, but I didn't need their money. I didn't need a place to stay. So like a lot of times I would meet up with them at certain times, like mostly in the evenings or certain times of the day, but I would meet up with them and then be able to leave. Like, whereas the guys that were there, they had to stay at their apartments that were funded by those groups, you know? So, and they lived off of that money. Like, they lived off of the food that was given to them by those groups, where I didn't have to. So I was lucky in that way. And even the bosses, the big brothers, which they call Dai Lo, they kind of knew that of me. They're like, oh yeah, you know, like he can go and do whatever. And so I was always very separate from them in a way, you know, which was also a good thing for them, because I gave them another facet of American life that they didn't have, right? Because it was very like Chinese specific to them, right? So I was able to go out and do different things.
Gotcha. That's really interesting. Yeah, because I was wondering, because again, you basically are talking, you're living between two tribes, essentially, right, in a way, right? Yeah. And you have maybe three tribes. You have your family
life.
Three tribes,
because I have my family.
Yeah, right. You have your family, you got, you know, the Chinese side, and you got the Atienses, and now you have to really pick one. And so now going into the new chapter of your life going with the Atienzas. And I know that Atienza Cali has obviously changed my life in so many ways. What, aside from just having a brotherhood that you now found and a social community that was positive in your life, can you recall any of the more poignant moments where you realized, hey, this Atienza family, this tribe now, this is really what I want? And was there anything memorable at that time that really made you realize, hey, this is it for me? The Atienza tribe is what I want.
I mean, I think I've always been that way from the very beginning, because I remember, like, one of the things that, you know, Tito Butch told me was that, you know, he was, he said, like, and it echoes from my own father when he did find out that I was doing stuff like that, was that the gangs are not your family. They're not, like, they're there to take advantage of those things. Like it's all propaganda. And that's one of the things, like, you know, like, people will sell you out. Like, you know, I was very paranoid when I was around them as well, because even though you're part of this group, they did a lot of, like, mind games and, like, you know, like, we would beat people up even in our own group. You know, we would hurt people in our own group. And a lot of that was just to, like, you know, like, sort of like to keep a chain of command, but also to mess with people's heads. Like, you don't know. So I remember always being on edge, you know, as I got deeper into it, you know, because I also met other non-Chinese that were there, and they didn't have good experiences as it got further into it, you know. So I was always on edge about those things. Like near the end of it, I was always worried that, like, something would happen. Like, I didn't like being, like, if we had to sit in a booth, I didn't want to sit between all these guys, you know, stuff like that. So, and Tito Butch would say that, like, they are not there to be your family, your tribe, you know, like they're taking advantage of you. They want something. Now, he didn't explain what all the other things are, but, like, I knew from, like, training with Bhutan Carl and his brothers, like, this is it. This is, like, but again, we're still kind of, like, building up, like, the meaning of tribe. Like, for us, it was, like, just hanging out. And I started applying, like, the things that I believe tribe meant or brotherhood meant to, like, not applying, but I was seeing it in the Atienza groups, right? Like, don't fuck around with each other's, like that was a big thing. Like, so I grew up where, like, especially in the Latino community that I also grew up in, like, and somewhat the Filipinos that I did meet at the time, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, messing around with each other's girlfriends. Like, it was very, like, you know, like, there was no boundaries, right? Like, you know, like, people might steal from your own, like, you know, if you had friends, you brought them in, like, they might steal from you. Where when I met the Atienzas, it wasn't like that. And the groups that they were with, it wasn't like that, you know? So it kind of fostered that, like, tribe mentality. And then really where I think, like, the change happened is when we met the Psyops, right? So, like, once that LOT kind of filtered into what we were doing, like, you know, that, like, that was it. Like, that, like, elevated what we were doing to even higher, like, standards. Where before, it was just like, hey, friends fight, you know, like there was goals, but it wasn't very organized. You know, we just knew, like, this was the right thing to do or honorable thing to do. But why? You know, so where Saga LOT really did that.
Yeah, Saga LOT and that's fantastic. I wanted to, for those listeners who don't know, do you mind kind of going into what SIOC mm-hmm. LOT is for the people out there who may not
sure. know? Sure. So SIOC LOT is, like, the real term is, like, SIOC LOT according to Pamana Tuhon, like, logical order of thinking according to Pamana Tuhon. And I think that's even trademarked someplace. But, like, it's just a way of thinking of, like, problem solving, you know, and it's almost too complex to, like, to explain. It's more than, some people kind of say it's critical thinking, but it's more than that, you know, and it's very much what problem solving is to me, right? So having goals and all those things. And once we start applying that to what we were doing in Atienza, I really thought like, man, it's like, it solidified everything. So we kind of like, and then sitting at Pamanaton's table also solidified everything. So not only with I'm going to move back, but like bikes and martial arts weren't the only thing that Duong Carl and I had in common. Like we were also very much into like, into the spiritual side of things, not like spiritual as in religion, but spiritual like energy. And we're doing like all these things. Like we would have discussions about that in between training and all that stuff. Like once we got to Pamanatohon, it just kind of like made its way right through. Like it was like one easy transition and it just never stopped. You know, so for me, I think that's where, like, I was like, hey, this is it. Like, you know, now that being said, LOT is not something you just, you know, you learn it and then you're a master. Like it's, you know, I am still making mistakes and I'm still, but now I really try to apply everything through that, like, style filter and try to figure things out. Like, you know, with the Atienza, like, with the Atienza as well. You know, 100%.
That's a great breakdown. I love that breakdown. So, and thank you for that. Cause I know there's a lot of people from the last few videos that it was mentioned, but not everybody was able to find out what that meant. So thank you so much for sharing that too on. And also, so now I want to fast forward in the time frame a little bit. So now you're with the Atienza group and now you're seeing Atienza Kali kind of evolve into what it is now.
Right.
I want to really, really touch upon, you know, your journey in the system as it's evolved since we celebrated our 20-year anniversary this past fall. You know, what are some of the more notable, I would say changes, but evolutions that you've seen since your time in the early days of the system and now seeing it evolve on this global scale?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think, so originally we came out, we were just fighting. We're like, hey, it's about fighting. Right. And then like, you know, and then we met the, and then we were just fighting ourselves, right? Like that's who we trained with. And then, Tuan Carl reconnected with the PsyOps, and then we went to media and we were sparring there. And like, you know, when we first were going there, we thought we were going to be like fighting, like really like, you know, our idea was like stick fighting and it's going to be no holds barred. And like, and then they came out with Action Flex and that was so new to us. Like, you know, we were like, oh my gosh. And like, and even then, like the lessons that I can't stress enough about, like the lessons I was learning, which I only know now, like that's part of LOT is like, you might hear it, but it's not until you're really like get more experience in it. Like you don't know all these lessons. And there were so many lessons even from there that I look back upon, like being prepared, like, you know, like now, like I am just, I'm the prototypical of 20 something year old just walking in like an idiot, not knowing what's happening, like knowing only first order of effect stuff. But now, like, I know, like, you know, hey, like, why are we here? What is the goal? What are, like, I'm not just spitting things out, right? Like, there's, like, purposes to things. And so we had that part. So, and then from there, like, Don Carl was, like, tasked with, like, you know, well, a big thing there was also, like, the death of Tito Butch. You know, that was a big thing. And I want to touch on that a little bit because at the funeral, I thought that one of the most impactful things I remember from the funeral of Tito Butch was that when Tong Carl gave his speech, his eulogy, he said that his dad was his hero, right? And I was like, and, you know, I mean, at this time, I'm taking in, like, things are making more, I'm trying to be more understanding of things. And to really, like, hear somebody say that, like, I never really heard somebody say, like, my father was my hero. Like, you hear about it, like, oh, like, in school, like, oh, I want to, and kids draw, like, you know, who's your hero? My dad, Abraham Lincoln, you know, all these things. But to hear an adult say it, like, that was like a big thing. And I was like, I was always like, wow, it's like, is my dad my hero? Like, now he is, like, because now, again, like through LOT and through experience, I know all the things that he's done. But at that time frame, I didn't think my dad was my hero, you know, at that time. Like, I'm like, and to hear Von Call say that, it was big. And I was like, wow, like, what does that mean? So even there, I was like, what does that mean to be a man, to be a father? Was like, that was like my first, like, I was like, that's pretty intense. So that was like a moment that definitely stands out of my mind in Atien Zakali and in my own development in Atien Zakali. And then from there, you know, we met the Sox, and in the Sox, we started building, they, you know, get out there. The first thing we did was like build evolutions under the guidance of Pamantuan. You know, like he said, hey, make this, like, this is how you teach the masses, you know, because we didn't have instructors. It was just really Tuan Carl, you know, and I was his assistant. That was it. Like, I wasn't an instructor. I was just his assistant. It was just Tuan Carl going out there all the time and his brothers, you know. And then from there, you know, the system starts growing. We interact with the military. All these things are happening. Like, and then really where, you know, we started getting more into, like, you know, I don't know if Tuan Carl talked about it, but really, like, you know, what's considered like the SOG Black program, which is the highest levels of like training, with the blade. And then from there, like the system kind of like really started developing now more, like, you know, like now we're, because through LOT, like, what was the purpose of all these things? And now really starting like trying to like, okay, so we did this thing, and now, like, you know, we had evolutions, and the purpose of evolutions was originally it was so that, you know, we just like Tuan Carl just took all the moves and he put them together that we did already. But it was really so that it's to teach people without having, like, without having an instructor there, so that they have something, a drill, something to remember, right? But then later on, as the system evolved, like Tuan Carl, like, we would put together like tests, and which eventually became our tens, our standards, and we realized like the evolutions weren't teaching people really how to fight, and we thought it did, you know, we thought it did, like, this is how we did it. But then, you know, but that was also because we did all these other reps of fighting. So then, like, even understanding that part, now we're back to it. Now it's almost come full circle where we're doing attack with cover sets, which is still kind of has a small portion of a drill, but now they're really learning how to like fight or defend, like, you know, really counter and stuff like that. And then now putting that with all the information that they got over the years, which is now the attack recover, all these things kind of like solidifying, it's great. And it pushes me because, you know, people are coming in and they're good, they're getting better and better in a shorter time frame. You know, and, you know, one of the things I think with like if you're an Atien Zakali, you want to excel. You don't like, you want to be the guy that always wins, right? So when you're seeing all these guys are getting better, like it put, like, I think that it pushes you as well. So that's what happens with me. I'm pushing here, and, you know, and then at the same time, like, so now I'm a full instructor. At the same time, like, my, you know, now I'm getting married. Like, the system evolves with the system is evolving with the members, you know, where before, like, there wasn't that many families because we're all in our 20s. Now, all of a sudden, now we have families, and now, like, and the system evolves with that, like, where in your 20s, you had a lot of time and you trained 5 days a week sometimes. And now families are around, and, or, like, you know, even not families, but serious relationships. And now you're not training 5 days a week. Like, Now, especially now with a family, you're lucky if you train an hour, half an hour a day, if you're, you know, and then you're trying to figure that part out. So the system evolves that way. And, you know, Tuan Carl, like, you know, I'm very lucky to be privy to, like, to be part of that circle where I see all the things that the system has to go through. And, you know, it's very interesting to see the track that it's gone through.
That's really awesome. Yeah. Cause I mean, I can only imagine I came in right when you all hit the public.
Right.
So my perspective, I'm part of that first generation where I was out across the floor in Woodbridge, New Jersey. I was part of that whole generation in Tuan Daryl's backyard and then mm-hmm. Tuan Carl's garage. Like I was part of that, but you really came from before it was even called Atienza Kali, if I'm not mistaken. It really was.
Yeah. It was called Tatipu Nankalis. You know, we had shirts. I wish, you know, looking back, I wish I had kept those shirts, but that's what it was called. Like it wasn't called Atienza Kali. It was Katipuna Nankalis, like KNK. Like, so it was still part of, like, you know, I think that was like Tita Butch's influence on that, because it was like, you know, part of like the KKK, like, you know, history part, you know? So it was very cool. And I was like, but now where it is, it's like night and day. And now, of course, like, Tuan Carl makes blades. All these things are just things that add to the depth of the system and the organization.
100%. And so what was really powerful about what you just said earlier, when you're speaking about the evolution of the, so it's not just the system, but really your life in the system, your lifestyle in the system was family. And I know we only have a little bit more time, but I do want to touch upon that. I would love to talk about your role as a dad now. Because when I first met you, you weren't a dad and
right,
not married. Yep. Now you're married with kids.
And like,
yeah.
You know, I don't think that you understand of a parent until you become a parent, you know?
Amen.
You know,
amen,
and now with the LOT, you know, I can understand all the things that my parents were doing before. You know, like, because I didn't have LOT, I really feel the depth of what they've done. You know, because of like the filters I can look through LOT. So I'm very thankful for everything that they've done. And like, you know, now I try to emulate it, but then also, you know, there's all these new things going on with the, like, how to raise kids. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in like corporal punishment styles things. And like, you know, it takes all my training not to do any corporal punishment, you know, and really like, try to adapt to that. But now, like, same thing, like, you know, the training really helped. Like, for me, the training really helped with being a father. Like, first of all, we, you know, grow, you know, doing as being part of like those really early part of the Atienza Kali, you know, that we used to do a lot of like the sleep depth stuff, like sleep deprivation. So for me, not sleeping, I can live on 5 hours. Like, if I get 5 hours of sleep, I'm pretty good, you know? So, and then even like, you know, having milk ready, like that's all training, being prepared. Like, you know, some people, like I remember going to the hospital and people would tell me, oh, it's going to be like havoc. It's going to be crazy. But it wasn't crazy because I have all this training. Like I knew prepare beforehand. Like when the baby cries, I have like 2 milk bottles ready. Why? Because I prepared it before. Like, why would I wait, you know? So I do all these things from training regarding like just the initial part of like raising them up was like very helpful from the training, you know, sleep depth, being able to control your emotions and, you know, and then like being prepared, like I'm just better prepared to do certain things. Like I know how to like what's necessary, what's not necessary, you know, but I think, like, again, that might sometimes conflict with what my wife thinks, right? But, and then part of the training is making sure that there's a little bit of harmony in that, in those two different thinking, right? Relationships is like one of the biggest parts of LOT, right? One of the most difficult parts of like PSP, which is part of psych protocols, right? Primary security protocols. So yeah, and then training wise, I go with the same thing like Tuan Carl's. Like, I wish I could get my I want, like, you know, when I first thought about having kids, like, I was like telling my sister, like, oh yeah, my kids, no matter, like, they're going to be soldiers. Like, I'm going to raise them up. They're going to do this. And now, you know, like, I understand from training, like, and especially to on Carl, that there's going to be chaos. There's nothing perfect. And you kind of like work your way through like this chaos. Right. And, but what is the goal? The goal is like to raise well-adjusted children. Right. So that's all, like, all I try to do is, it's kind of like do everything through that kind of filter of raising well-adjusted children and not try to put as many hang-ups that I grew up with onto them. Right. Yeah.
That's powerful. No, yeah, it's so true. Cause you actually answered the question wonderfully, because I was always curious, like, we became parents at around the same time,
right?
But you have so much more reps on training LOT than I do. And so watching you going through that chapter of your life, as I was going through it myself, mm-hmm. essentially, it really was inspiring to me, because it gave me a reference to kind of look. I think you and Guru Clint, San Antonio, like
Clint and Pete,
both of y'all. Yeah. Like, it gave me this great image of, like, okay, like, this is how you apply training. And I'm still making mistakes all the time. I mean, my three boys are like, you know, they all have different personalities. It's like Mass Attack now, because there's three. And there's so it's like you're trying to figure out what to say and what to do with the wife and how to kind of juggle everything. But I think I can attest to that as well, just from my personal experience, your influence in my life, you know, the things we've had discussions when I first moved here, things I was going through, you know, as a new dad and things like that. Mm-hmm. You really helped me in that. So I want to say thank you in that. And before I wrap this up, I do want to talk, since we're talking about kids, this is how I like to end every interview. So this podcast really is for my three boys. It's for Ethan, Evan, and Elliot. And so the whole inspiration for this podcast was I wanted them to learn from the men that impacted me and inspire me. And so if my kids are of age, right, like Ethan, Evan, Elliot, let's say, imagine they're behind me and they're of age, and they ask you, what does it mean to be a man? What would you tell them?
I would say to be a man is to be a problem solver, you know, problem solver. And then again, having goals. Come on down here. Since we're here, come on, come here. My daughter just walked in.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's why, you know, it's like there's a lot that goes, like, it's a very complex answer. And like, I think my first thing is to be a problem solver, because that's what Atienza is all about. Right. Being a problem solver, and like, what are the problems? What are, like, when you have a problem, like, you have to identify what is the problem and what is your goal to, like, and then solving that part. So like, and for me, that's the first thing I always try to do, right? Like, what is the problem? And then, you know, I still attribute it to, like, you know, from the training, like, I don't like complain about things, right? It's just what it is. Like, this is it. Sure, you can have whatever you want, right? So, hold on for 1 second. Got it? Yeah, so those are like the things, like, sorry about that, Mike. She's like,
this is my whole life.
She's like, yeah,
this is every day.
She walked in down here.
I really, my kids haven't walked in yet, so it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, I try to, like, that's one of the things, like, the training, like, I got from Tom Cross, like, how do you get the kids involved? Everything is part of life. You know, there's not, I don't separate it. Like, you know, this is like what we do, and this is it. Like, you know, I recently had that discussion. Hey, you know, hi there. Come on over here. You've been looking for me? You want to say hello? Say hi.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi there.
How are you?
Right? Say hi. That's Guru Mike. Yeah, one of these days you're gonna see him and his family.
Yeah, I gotta. Right? We got to get the kids together and get them a play date eventually at some point, all together.
Yeah, I think that once we get, like, we'll really have to have like one of probably a call, like something really, like, you know, all the families, like, together. You know,
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty big cool.
Daycare. We just have like a daycare area, like, just for all the kids. Yeah,
but you know, it's like, let me leave you with this. I know time's running out, but like, one of the things, like, Tom Carl mentioned, like, you know, like, one of the things that he was talking about, like when he thinks of like the what people consider the high seat of the table, like, you know, of the high ranks of like, you know, and different cultures have it differently. But what he thinks of, like, when he thinks of like the of Atien Zakali and the and like the high rank table, it's really like a family table. It's like everybody in the living room, like trays of like folding TV, you know, TV trays and like, and the fireplace and just like people hang out with their families. That's what he wants it to. And he's always wanted to be like that. So, you know, I think like, even though they don't have their own family, like it's part of like, it's part of the system. Yes. Hi.
Yeah. No, 100%. I agree with that because, I mean, obviously, like, this is really great that your kids and your family kind of ran in there because I think that's part of it. Like, one of the things that Tuan Carl taught me when I first started, before I was even dating anyone, was like, you know, always keep your family around when you're training. Done. Keep them around when you're doing cool things like this. You know, keep them around because they're part of everything. And you just involve them in everything. You're actually a big, and you always told me that as well. That was one of the things you taught me. So I really do appreciate you. Hi.
No problem. Hi.
How old is she? She's eight. She's seven or eight.
Is she? Simona is five.
Oh, five. Okay. I'm losing. My son's seven. So I just thought they were like the same age. All the years are blurring. But
Tuan,
thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much.
No problem. For sharing this. It's important what you're talking about, you know, and I see that more and more so, not in our generations. Like, I really feel like the future generations, they have a lot where they're not getting that kind of like that toughness that they need, you know, and 100%. That could be, you know, they could be, that's a lot of factors going into that, like the, like technology for everything, like, you know, PC stuff, but like, you know, I know a lot of my younger relatives, they're nowhere where I was at that time frame. You know, maybe they're smarter, maybe they're more capable in sense of technology, but, you know, like they have a hard time, like, you know, with regular things.
No, 100%. And again, you're the ones, honestly, you, Tuan Carl, like all the older brothers in the tribe have made me who I am now. And so I thank you for not only your time today, but thank you for making me the guy I am today and for inspiring me to be a better dad and a better husband. And I definitely want to make sure that we all get together. I'll try to bring my kids up to call with the wife and we'll all get together. But you have a great weekend. Let me know.
Too. All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
So there you have it. The interview with Tuan Leo Manalo. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys found it as powerful as I did. Please make sure to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It would go a long way in making sure that our message is spread even further. Guys, thank you. Have a great day. God bless and be the leader in your life.